We see we are really a world congress, and people coming from so many countries. It's lovely to meet and to have a chance to talk in peace about what is really moving us, the existential issues. Well, this morning I'm going to present you. Do you hear me well enough, or do I need a microphone?
No.
I'm going to present you to work with you on a method which is a very existential method, a phenomenological method, and I'd like to present you first the method and then to work with you on that method. Maybe we can do a therapy demonstration if somebody would like to do that, or we can work on a common theme in the group. We will decide after the break how we can do that. But first I think it needs some presentation. By the way, I have PowerPoints. I will put them on my homepage tonight. They will be on the homepage, and also the presentations on of Sunday will be on my homepage. You see it, Lengle Info. Yeah. And I'm also recording the seminar, so you can putting it on the homepage, so you can hear the audio tape afterwards. Well, this method is based on the existential analysis Vienna type. You know there are under the same name, two different existential analysis. Existential analysis Vienna type is based on Viktor Frankl, and we define it. I give just a short glimpse of the basis, just 2 minutes. You have it on the yellow sheet, on the leaflet, to help people to live with inner consent. Inner consent means, I will speak a little bit more on Sunday on my presentation, means to be decided to do what I do, to be decided on an emotional basis. This is maybe the big difference to Viktor Frankl, because Frankl also worked about decidedness, and most existentialists, all of them, speak about decidedness. But normally it is combined with being responsible and fulfilling responsibility. And this is very often mistaken as something cognitive. Mm-hmm. Whereas in existential analysis Vienna type, we are very much emotionally based. The person appears, the freedom appears on an inner accordance. And the accordance, like the word is saying by itself, means there is the heart in it, cordial. Being cordially there means having an accordance. So, to live with inner consent, this means if you have inner consent, if you feel an inner yes to be here now, then you are right. If you do not feel an inner yes, you better go out and look for what you have an inner yes. So, it's a risky seminar. For me, it's risky. Always when I say that, I'm afraid that people stand up and go out, but normally it doesn't happen. Existential analysis is based on two legs, we could say. One is the processual model. This is what we are going to speak about. Sorry, it worked before. It doesn't at the moment. Yeah. Here, this part is how we process experiences which are not digested, not integrated, not understood, which are still foreign, which occupy us. The other is the structural model, which we are not going to speak about here. This is the basis of existence. What are the structures on which our existence is based? We have four dimensions. I will speak a little bit more on Sunday about this, but you have a summary on this yellow leaflet of these structural models. The structural model means that like the walls of a house or the floors of a house, they allow to move and to live there. So to be able to be in that world, which in the contrary produces anxiety, is a structural element. To be able to connect with life, and if this doesn't happen and function well, then we have depressive feelings. This is another level of our, or another structural element in our existence. So connection to world, connection to life, connection to oneself, this inner relationship to oneself, inner encounter, the inner dialogue is very basic for being able to live an existentially fulfilling life. And of course, the meaning dimension, the future, the context in which we are, in which we find ourselves. And to deal with that is another structure of existence. This is not the theme of today, but the theme of today is what happens if something goes wrong in one of these floors, in one of these stories. If on the level of being in the world, I feel blocked, if I do not have emotional access to what is going on, when I'm numbed, what happens when I'm traumatized, what happens when I can't forget a terrible phrase of my father who always said, you will be a failure in your life, and I'm living with this script, as transactionalists say, and I can't come over it. This is the theme of our seminar. How can we deal with such experiences and dissolve the blockades? We work with the concept of person. Therefore, the method is called personal existential analysis. This means I, as a person, I personally have to deal with it, want to be present. I personally want to find out what is important, what counts in that moment, what matters. Not me as I think I should be. Not me as my parents wanted me to be. Not me as my partner or my boss wants me to behave. But me personally. You see immediately that this concept of persons means an intimacy of the human being. This means an unexchangeable me. Therefore, we have to look a little bit more on what is person, because it is central for this method. Being a person means to be in a constant, open connection with the otherness, with other people, with the world around me, with the things, with the economic situation, the political situation, exchange with others and with me in the inside. This is the model of personal existential analysis, or this is the model of how we can see the person. I, me, as a person, have an inner world, and there is a whole world which is intimate, which is belongs only to me. When I close my eyes, I am with me. I shut out the outer world to a very high degree. It's not possible to shut it out totally, but let's say for 90%. When you are meditating, for even more, 95, 99, a good meditator may come to that level. And to be just inwardly with me. It does so good, doesn't it? To connect with me, this is this is just me. I am present to myself. I'm not a foreigner. I encounter me, I see me, I feel me, I feel my presence. And then when I open my eyes, and my ears are always open, I cannot shut my ears. And the taste and so, we are connected, we are beings in the world. But we can concentrate more to the outer side. And then we see the outer world. I see you. I see a difference. I recognize, as close as you may be to me, you are different to me. You are not me, but you belong to me. You are my world. I am in this world, and I can only be in a world. Being human, being there means always, as existentialists of course know very well from Kierkegaard to Heidegger, that being means always being together, as Frankl says, together with the world, with something else, somebody else. And I'm both. I'm on the one side, I'm standing within me. On the other side, I'm standing in an outer world which is not me, which confronts me, which enriches me, which strengthens me, but which also can attack me. It is my world which defines me. This world defines me. And we are at the same time, always, internal, intimate beings and external beings connected with otherness. What I am, I became through the others. But not only, they didn't determine me totally. They fed me, they stimulated me, they enriched me. What I am, who I am, is also created by myself, by my taking a position, by my deciding for what I am going to do, by the way, by what I am occupying myself. This is not easy to understand. Because we think, we are trained to think in a linear way, one after the other, but this is means simultaneity. At the same time, I am myself from the inner world, and I am in the outer world. And therefore, me as a person, we can put it into a schema like this, where two circles, two ellipses are overlapping. I am the constant overlap. This being, this coming together of the two legs, which form the trunk. The union of the opposites, which in itself are not opposites. They appear to us in the way we think, in that abstract way, that they are opposites. So we can describe this person and say, person is that what says I in me, that me within myself. This is something, how do I know that this is me? Is this really me? From where does it come that I can say, I want to be here? I, me, who is that me? And what makes it talking me? What makes it that something raises a, like something like a voice within myself, saying
me.
The questions, the psychology has to give up and say, we only can start on to investigate on a psychological level. We can only start at that point where the phenomena appear, when they are there. But before they appear, we do not know from where they come. This is the miracle of being human. But the capacity is there, and it happened. So that what we understand with person is something very deep, what we cannot grasp totally. But we can experience that it appears in me. And it appears in my eyes. And when I look into the eyes of you, I see your eyes shining. This is the person which appears through the body, in the gesture, in the voice. It appears. It cannot be grasped. But it starts saying, I. And since it cannot be grasped, we can call it free. Free means not even I can determine what this person starts talking to me. It talks by itself. And I cannot determine to decide to what this inner resonance tells me. When I connect my decision with this inner resonance, with that what starts saying, that's me, I really want to do this. With this essential capacity, then my decision, my choice is free, is really free. But I'm so free that I do not have to connect my decision, my choice, with my inner resonance. I can decide cognitively, or because it's rational, or because it brings more money, or because it's more pleasurable. Also, I have the feeling that's not really me, but it doesn't matter for the moment. And I start to talk with myself and lose me in my originality, me as a person. And indeed, on this level, I feel the responsibility. I feel if I can stand behind or not. This means responsibility. Responsibility means I am standing behind it. I can let me see the way how I aim, how I behave, what I do, and so on. More cognitively speaking, more on the psychological level, person is the autonomous being. Autos nomos, giving the law to myself, from myself. I am deciding on myself. This means autonomous. And if this autonomy is relating to this inner person, then it is called authentic. And we feel purely subjectively. I can identify with it. The question, who I am, has this inner part, the resonance, and the outer part, with what I am identifying. I am identifying, for instance, with existential therapy. So I say, one thing which belongs to me, I am an existential therapist. This is how I can define myself and grasp a bit more from myself. And in behavioral therapy, they have the big term which comes closest to this concept, is the concept of self-efficacy. What is the specific potential of this person? Person is this openness. You remember these two ellipses? there is an exchange between the circles. From the outside into the inside, from the inside into the outside, it cannot be separated totally. So, by this openness, we are always receiving something from the outside and from the inside. And so they come together in this overlap, intersection of the person. To be receptive has consequences. It has the consequence that this inner world is attainable by ourselves, but also by others. I can give more access or less access to my inner world, to my partner, to my friend, to you. But I can never disclose my inner self totally to you. Even when I'm speaking with a poker face now, it would say something about me. So, this is also miraculous, isn't it? We have, to some degree, we have the power to hide ourselves, to withdraw ourselves, to take ourselves out, to not being really present. But we have not the power to absolutely not being present, to not showing anything. We always show something we do not show, but it becomes visible. Something which has to do with me. This is the basis why we can make work with phenomenology. Phenomenology is exactly taking that out from what becomes, what appears, becomes visible. If the other wants it to say or not, it's there. So, being a person means being open, being accessible. Therefore, we can encounter a person because there is an accessibility and attain and reach the inner world. Am I clear enough with that? Do you have questions you may always ask? I think it's somehow, it's also good to just jump into the theme and to dive in and really swim into that concept of person. We started very normally, so live with inner consent is relatively understandable, but who is giving that consent? And now we are going very deep in that understanding of being a person, in that interconnectedness with the other and myself. And this is the art of being a human and leading a human life, to maintain this equilibrium between the outer world and the inner world, to be present in the outer world, to receive the outer world and elaborate it in the inner world. As a human being, as a person, I have a capacity to understand what is going on. It's very difficult to know what understanding means, but somehow we know it because we do it. You try to understand what I'm presenting. This means you are present cognitively, but even more, not only thinking, you are engaged, you are involved, you are motivated, you are personally interested in understanding what we are talking about. So in understanding, also the person appears to some degree. It's a form of activity of me as a person. So I'm by my openness, I'm receptive, but what I'm receiving, I want to absorb it. It's like eating. You are eating and swallowing what we are eating and chewing. And then, a very intimate process begins. We are absorbing what is valuable for us. The carbohydrates and the proteins are the amino acids, etc., and the salts. And on a psychological level, we do the same. You hear that, you listen to that, you understand it cognitively, but you want to understand it on an existential level, on a personal level, and that means, what does this have to do with my life? Where can I make use of it? What does it help me? What is it made for? So, we want to see it practically. We try to see how it is related to our own life, what we can do with it. And this is an existential act, which means I am personally there. And understanding in itself means we are connecting the new information with what we already know, with the experiences we had, and we say, oh yes, I understand. I did something similar when I was trying to understand Martin Heidegger. I hope I'm a bit easier to understand, but nevertheless, the intention may be the same. And we connect it not only with the already understood or with the prior experience or the former knowledge, we also connect it with what moves me personally, actually. And so it may happen that on one day I'm very open to and understanding easily what I'm reading or what I'm talking or my partner, and on another day I'm on another planet and I don't understand my partner, and it's difficult because we have understanding means to connect it with my actual own me as a person. So you remember to be receptive, to understand, to be able to understand, and to give an answer. It's very simple. On that level, it's still very simple. We receive, and we eat, and chew, and swallow, and we get the answer. The answer of what we are eating is we get the power, and we are dedicating what we can. On the psychological level, we also receive in an encounter or in a seminar, information, experience with the other person. We try to understand what it is all about, what it is useful, how it is connected with my prior situation, my actual world, me actually. And then we react, we give an answer. We bring out and say what we think about it, how it is for us. We react in form of an activity, an act. So we can put these three basic activities of a person in such a triangle, which shows that we are receptive. We take what is given, information, sensual information, you know, just the blow of a wind in the hair, we receive it. It need not be a word. We try to understand it. The blow of the wind in the hair tells me it's so good to be alive and to experience such a connection with the world, such a surprise. And we are responsive, and we say, this would be, for instance, a response to that blow in the wind, to get more, or to turn away because it's too strong, too cold. It's not like in Rome, it's longer, maybe too wet.
Is there any place, an entropy? Is there any place, if you go back to the process of understanding, I understand basically the capacity we have as a human being to understand, and also to be understanding, in my view, is an active process.
Yeah.
And also, it is active process, it means I have a choice and I'm making decision, and is there any place for responsibility?
Right. Yes, some do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On this basis, we can talk about psychological health. And so when a person is able to realize these potentials, then the person can integrate, can deal with his or her reality, and can be present in the actual situation. This makes the person present when she or he understands and gives answer, when he or she is open enough to what is going on. Now we make a switch. Look at this. This was how the person appears when we look at the person from the outside. When I look at you and I see you are listening, then I see you are receptive. When I look at you and see that you are wondering, then I know that you try to understand what is going on. And to be responsive means, okay, either you are silent, then I assume you understand, or you bring up a question. And so, this is the way how we see from outside a person. Hope to receptiveness. When a person is not listening, then this person is not present. But when a person is looking, listening, and try, and I see from outside, if the person tries to understand and makes gestures and has a mimic and in the way, this is a constant interaction, you know. I see it from outside. And then to get the answer, to a nodding, for instance, is a response, or a denying gesture, or whatever. Then I see from outside the way how this person is present. And now we look at the same steps from the inside, subjectively seen. When I am open and receptive, I get an impression. Something is pressing on me, subjectively spoken. We are looking at what impresses me, what touches me, what makes me feel, what draws my attention. This is an impression. And I come to an inner positioning by understanding. I find out how this is for me and what is important for me and what my stand towards it looks like. I think this is exactly your question. It was lacking so far. So you were anticipating that you need this inner side, this inner positioning. Because without this inner positioning, we do not come to a responsibility. Responsibility is based in an inner positioning. This is inner positioning means basically spoken. What do I think about it?
Do I feel that this is correct? What is important in my eyes? Is this important in my eyes or not? You are making inner positions right now. But you're thinking, oh, it's something wrong, or this is quite odd. And then on the basis of the inner position gives me really a basement on which I can stand and come to my expression. And the expression is sometimes a word, sometimes an act, or both, or sometimes not even moving and doing nothing, which is also an expression, but it's not worth it to say anything. I think this is not difficult to understand. I think this is something we know very well, each of us. We do it constantly. It's not an invention, it is a phenomenological description of what is going on in every human being constantly, 100 times a day, subconsciously, mostly subconsciously. And it's important to know what's going on naturally and subconsciously in case we encounter difficulties. Then we can make use of something which is natural to the human being, and we don't have to imply some specific techniques. Just we connect with what the human being is able to do by itself, or himself or herself, and we do the same and apply what they already know to do, but in that specific case, they are overstressed and blocked and are not able to apply. So this method is a very natural phenomenological application of what we do. Let's look a little bit at the hindrances. These potentials can be blocked. The impression can be blocked. One can be confused, overwhelmed by feelings, hurt, depressed, overstressed. It can simply be too much and I cannot hear it anymore, and I'm either too open or not open enough. There are many, many possibilities. In psychopathology, you find all psychopathology has to do with at least one, mostly all the three elements or steps of this processual capacity. The inner positioning. I can feel unsure, thrown, exerted, confused, not grasping myself, not finding myself. And in the expression, helplessness is very common in psychopathology. I don't know what to say, what to do, how to behave. I knew possibly what would be the correct or right, but I'm not able to realize it. I'm too anxious, etc. So in this triangle, we see that the block may be on different levels. The impression may be blocked, the process of positioning may be blocked, and the expression may be blocked. As a result, we can maintain or summarize that to be myself, to be oneself, does not happen automatically. And it does not always happen by itself. It is an activity. It is an endeavor. This is why we do existential therapy. Because being myself depends on my own engagement, in my own commitment, on my own being there, on my taking seriously, taking into account what is going on with me on the level of reception, on what I understand,
and then what I'm capable to answer.
It depends on my own positioning to be able to keep an impression, to be able to take a stand towards this impression, and to be able to communicate my inner position with the other people and the world around me in a way that I can still remain myself, in a way that I do not alienate but grow in becoming more who I am and who I could be. This doesn't happen automatically. Of course, most of this happens unconsciously. So the unconsciousness is always present in existential therapy. But it doesn't matter so much if things are conscious or unconscious. On the contrary, if they happen and can happen unconsciously, it's even better. And we are not forced, as Freud says, who is very anxious with the unconsciousness, very afraid of the unconsciousness. Unconsciousness is a threat for Freud. For us, as Franke put it, or you put it, I think in most existential therapies, the unconsciousness is also friendly. The unconsciousness, we don't have to be afraid. What we can do unconsciously, my gestures for instance, now I'm not aware of my gestures. Now, at the moment when I'm talking about, I'm coming in, but it happens by itself, and it's wonderful. It's even more natural when it happens unconsciously. And when I smile unconsciously, it's nicer than when I say cheese for the photograph. So, when we can do things unconsciously, this is an advantage. It gives us free, the attention is free for more things. We can have a broader attention. Mostly it happens unconsciously, but this does not mean that it happens by automatically, because even in the unconscious level, we take stance. We make decisions, unconscious decisions, in a moment, in a second. Most or many decisions become aware when they happen, but many don't. But if this does not take place, when the process fails, then psychopathology comes up. The application now, practical part. We have a short form for working with these capacities of the person. To apply, to make use of these basic capacities. And it looks very simple. And it is somehow very simple, but as it is the case with all what has to do with the person, it is infinitely deep. But at the first glimpse, and so we can start, and we can apply it, let's say, on the level of counseling. And we can rely on this openness, on this receptiveness, and say, how is it for you? For instance, somebody who suffers of not having a partner and living alone, and cannot step over it, cannot get rid of these thoughts and painful feelings and loneliness. Let him or her describe, how is it for you to live without a relationship? How does this impress you? What does this do with you?
connect with yourself, take it into the inner world, that what happens to you from the outer world. Take yourself up. Reconnect with you who is so suffering. How is this for you, that you live alone? You know that the narrative, the description of such an experience is already very helpful. People become much more oriented. They close the gap between the happening and their own experience. They reconnect with the world in which they are. When I'm able to accept myself, self-acceptance of how something is for me, and I'm able to hold it up and to see it and to look at it, then I'm emotionally moved. A grief process may start, for instance. I give place, room. I give room to my emotionality. Repressed emotionality is always pathological, because as we have to live our being here in a whole way. If we repress a part of it, we are fragmented, and a fragmented life is never leading to a fulfilling life. Then, let's take a position to it. What do you think about it? What is your opinion about the fact that you are alone? Living without relationship, how is it for you? Yeah, it's so hurting and painful and trist and sad and... how do you feel? I feel so lonely and miserable and somehow devaluated. You know, some more connections come up. Devaluated, and as a psychotherapist or a counselor, I think he is devaluating him, but he feels so. And what is your opinion? What do you think about it? About the fact that you live alone. This may be because the client tells me to live alone means that people think that somehow something is not correct with me. Something is weird with me. Somehow I must be crazy. That I think the specific patient now, that no woman, no girl has an interest for me. I cannot connect with the woman. I must be weird. And then insist. The art of phenomenological procedures is not to be too quick. Remain and look at it and ask him, do you really think that something is not okay with you? Is this your own opinion, you personally? He spoke about what he feared, what could be the opinion, and he had that opinion about himself, but he was never really confronted with himself personally. Do you personally also think the same? As a psychotherapist or counselor, you may be afraid to ask such a terrible question, because he's of course afraid. Doesn't mean think I'm weird. And you, do you think you are weird? This is the art of consciousness. To remain so honest,
so straightforward, so clear, that he confronts the person with himself. If you think so, if you really think that you are weird, and if you are weird, we have to work on it. But it may be the case that you are not weird, that you just are afraid others could think that you are weird, but you for yourself, you have a different opinion about yourself. And so this is like inducing a healing process, in bringing together some borders which are divided, what other people could think and what I think. It is not brought together, and by this confrontation, by this opposing to him, his patient realized that he had somehow a different thinking, but somehow it had a resonance to him. And with this question, he looked at me, he glazed at me, and he was a little bit shocked. And this was exactly the spine in his soul.
Yes, reminds me. You could formulate the question in what is your opinion? Because I experience most clients, when you ask about opinions, they reflect about what others think, about what is normal in my society.
Yeah.
And to impose a question on them can help them to be more clear about what they feel. And then they can be scared. So, that's a very powerful instrument.
It's a powerful, but it's not spectacular. it's somehow very, very natural, human, down to earth, simple, humble. It's a humble procedure. But I know for myself, at the beginning, it needed an effort from me. I was too cowardly at the beginning. I was too much therapist, not wanting to do harm to the patient. But now I know I must make the patient suffer from what he's has in himself or herself. And so my duty is to make explicit what he says implicitly. He says, say, may you think that I'm good. As you say, the opinion, people normally start talking about what other people say. And now make it personal. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. So, I get confronted with myself. This patient say, well, I'm a well practicing, he was a physician, well practicing physician. I'm quite successful. So, I cannot be so really.
You hear what he's saying as a phenomenologist? He doesn't say, no, for sure, I'm not. He gives explanations. He holds on an outer appearance as a physician, effective. But that's not yet what he personally says. What out of the inner self starts talking within him. And so I say, when the patient or client start to talk that way, they need protection. They need time to come closer. And so be empathic and say, oh yeah, that's a good answer. That's true what you say. Because I know he needs that grip to hold on for not falling into something which is dangerous. That's a good answer. that's true. That's something which is opposing to what you feel people could think about you. And if you ask yourself, could there be maybe a little bit correct in that what people could think about you? Could there be something what you swear to say, well, something is not totally correct? You start with smiling and say, that's true. It's not normal that a man at the age of 36 still lives with his mom in the same apartment or that. There is something which is not totally correct. This was what he deep inside felt, that something he did not do his step of deliberation of freeing himself from the mud, this strong mother, this lovely, extremely lovely mother, which was caring for him too much, and he was not strong enough, and his father was also too weak to oppose this strong mother. And so he wasn't really free, and he went out into the world with that feeling, I am not a boy. And as a mother boy, when I see another woman, I make her a mother to me. And this is not what girls want at that age. No, no, no. Some won't. And they want to do it, and it becomes a bit difficult sooner or later.
So, what is your own opinion? You see the process. What do you think? Is that correct? When people think about you that way, what do you personally think about it? How is it for you personally? And don't forget, let's take the clients, give them some time, and let them make some circles around the hot spot. Therapy doesn't happen as it is described in the books. It happens with more detours. It doesn't have
details.
And then finally the question was, and what would you do? Expression, response, activity. How do you bring that into the world? Of course, on this, what we brought out here, we had to work a bit more. But just to make him able to go out and to do dates, for instance, he can finish the process, the steps, and come to the third step, and come back later on this, how can he delimitate himself from his mother. And to work. This is, of course, this was a work of about a year, then finally he was able. But after this short form lasts 20 minutes, not more. And we finished with that question. And what would you do? In that sense, what would you say, for instance, to a woman who would ask you about that? His greatest fear was that he meets a lovely woman and she could ask him, are you married? You would say proudly, no. But when she continued, why not? How old are you? 36, not yet married. There must be something wrong with you. Mm-hmm. What would you say? How would you answer? What do you think? What could he say? We now know that he personally has the feeling that something is not correct. But
but that on the other hand, he is not totally weird. He has a good self-esteem on the professional level, but on that very personal level, he has not a good self-esteem. What would he say? Because if he is not prepared to give an answer in such a situation, he cannot go out and date. This is what happened all these years. This was a bit hard. And I said, you can simply say the truth. What are you going to lose? Then she would think badly about me. Yeah. It's better she knows who you are than she knows, gets it to know in a half a year later. Because if you want to enter a real relationship, she will, one day she will know all about you. So base it on the truth. Say, what happened? He said, yeah, you know, that's true. This is what I'm suffering about. That I wasn't able, I was too shy, too afraid to meet with women, and so I didn't go out, and at the same time I was very well kept and cared by my mother at home, and I didn't have a need to go out, and my mother always said, you don't have to go out, you have everything at home. So I tell her, and tell her about her, your mother, and how it is for you, and how your life was. You may have experienced the same little freezing reflex, this little shock of what to tell a lady who is lovely and whom I would like to meet again, who asks me, are you married? I say, no. And then, did you ever live, have you ever lived in a relationship? And he feels his fear coming up, and he feels being destroyed and being a nobody in front of her. And on an empathic level, he immediately feels this paralyzing reaction. And to confront this is therapeutic work. To really stand there straight and say, what could you tell her? And the answer, when we leave behind the paralyzation, the answer is very simple. Show yourself. Tell her. If she understands, you have a good basis of relationship and you can be well together. If she doesn't understand, she's not the right for you.
Seems to me like that the person you're talking about there is in prison. He's in a kind of prison,
right,
and has grown very comfortable for him.
Yes.
Now, when I think about it, it's a very simple prison in a way. Because he's able to answer those questions and he's able to face it, this subjective thing for him. But I'm thinking of Carl Gustav Jung. In 1926 he went to Africa. And he suddenly realized that he was a prisoner to a European view of the world. And I'm thinking too of an article I read there recently by Charles Taylor, how a prisoner, we can be prisoners to a view of perception. As seeing the world in terms of cause and effect. Now, those latter two seem to me to be more complex. Like, either we get into a comfortable way of viewing the world in our prisons. And I thought, Dr. Langlin, that you were, at the beginning, were you taking it for granted that the basic person is not already a prisoner in the environment in which he is. Because that seems to me to be the hardest thing of all to get out of.
Yes.
You'd like to say something about that?
That's, yeah, you put it perfectly.
Thank you. It's a great contribution. Connecting it with Jung, Carl Gustav Jung's experience.
Yes.
I'm seeing it. How we are all prisoners of our culture and civilization, and but not only prisoners. You know, a house can be a prison, but it can be a protection. So I would like to put it into that broader horizon, that it is a prison when I go to Africa, but when I remain in Europe, it's a protection, it's a normal life.
It all depends.
It is relative.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in physics, the relativity theory makes everything relative. Everything is interconnection.
The blame therapy comes down to preparing people right. to live in an imprisoned world, to live a kind of, you know, to get used to. It's a social engineering of people.
Right. It's a terrible term, but somehow it's right.
You know, he's normal, he can go home now. He's just like the rest of us, crazy. You know.
Yes. So, and therefore, we cannot say that only our patients are in prison. Yeah. We are also
that's
in
right.
prison.
We're there too.
Is, yeah.
With them. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, life also means to get adapted to an environment. If we do not adapt, we cannot survive. This belongs to the limitations of the human condition. So we must adapt and we must imprison or in gender, in age, in squeeze into our reality somehow to be in the world. Yeah. Sorry.
I think for me there's another challenge, and that is that I can't do number three unless I've adequately done numbers one and two. Because what that implies, and maybe this links to my imprisoned world, is that how is it for me and what is my opinion getting personal, intimately personal about that? Somehow enables, and I feel okay with my personal position. It enables me then to meet my world non-defensively and in a way of curiosity by virtue of knowing how I have, if I want to use the word imprisoned, I don't use that word anymore, but it facilitates a meeting of my world from a position of some curiosity. This is who I am. How is my world different from me, or how are you different? And I'm not threatened by that. We can celebrate our difference. So the woman says to me, so how is it for you? I feel okay about how it is for me. And while you may think that's weird, I can be curious about your opinion of weirdness. Or
yeah. And this opens dialogue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is the basic for existential, or the basic outcome of existential therapy, to open dialogue with the other.
And to meet my world non-defensively, as much as I can.
Yeah, as much as, of course, we. Should not be of course not naive, but with at least prejudices as possible.
With some curiosity.
With some curiosity. Curiosity is something. I want to know what to need, what to see.
I'm not obsessed with defending or simply cementing that which I already know.
Yeah. That we transcend this.
Change.
Yeah, we change. That we change in a self-transcending way. This is the brightest point. Self-transcending, to become more because we transcend ourselves. Yeah. And this needs openness, this needs that interest, curiosity.
And I don't always find that easy for myself.
That's a lifelong process. That's for everyone. Yeah. But that makes life so interesting. That when I was 20, I thought when I'm 50, I would be more or less done. I know I'm far away from the universe.
And I'm way ahead of that, so there's still.
No, it's okay. It was very similar.
Very similar.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was interested in what you said. You used the word suffer for what you may bring to mankind. I wonder if you could say more about that.
To make the kind of suffering.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Most clients who come to me bring with them a suffering. Very few clients come out with some curiosity about themselves, you know, to have more self growth or whatever. Most comfort is something. And what I regularly observe is that they try to avoid suffering. And they have good reasons to avoid suffering, because it is all could be overdemon. They are not prepared. They do not know how to deal with this. And what they need is somebody who helps them suffer.
To look.
To take it out. To look honestly, open-minded, curiously about why, when there is suffering, there is something very important in it. Otherwise, I wouldn't suffer. It would be against all the evolution and the theory of life. If there would be suffering without any meaning, any content, anything which is important. And therapy means accompaniment in suffering. There are an accompaniment. And that is so hard to go through. And so I could. This is not a very deep, difficult therapeutic equation, of course, but it is the same model that the other needs me to become more himself. It needs that encounter, that confrontation, that who raises the question which he is afraid to ask himself. And this makes him look paralyzed or feel freezed for a moment. And that's the point then. And you're there. And to do it alone would be too much. To have somebody who is friendly enough to assist him and going with him. Connecting on a human basis. Thank you for the
I liked how you said to allow time when you ask for the person's opinion. That's quite essential.
You know what helps me to allow time? I was able to do that when I stopped wanting to be a bit better. And so I stopped wanting to be a bit better. I wanted to let what is possible. This is like the deep fundamentals. Withdrawing myself, stepping back, it's okay in a phenomenological sense. It's not leaving screen. I'm maybe like a catalyst, often you say that.
Catalyst.
It helps to make possible what comes out of itself, from their capacity. And this personal capacity. To reopen, to help to come to a personal stability, to give myself back to the world. If I can assist that this is possible for client, then I did my work. But I can't even say how much I contributed to the effect or to the outcome. But the investigation in psychotherapy and existential psychotherapy is very difficult. We can measure side effects, of course, symptoms, but that's not that what we live to assess the real side.
Thank you for your questions. There is psychotherapeutic application. This is a bit more complicated now. I make it short so that we can work practically after the break. In the 5 minutes we will have a coffee break or a tea break, in British tea break. We can give these I show it briefly in the PowerPoint edition. We start PEA, personal existential analysis, with a phase which we call phase zero, the description to we collect information, which is not specific for PEA, therefore we call it step zero. And we look at what is unclear, where there are contradictions, what we do not understand, missing elements. Watch it. We are not interested in the opinions or what he thinks about it. Stop, talk, let him talk about this, because this is derogatory. The attitude of the therapist is cognitive. What happened? We are like a policeman in that situation. We want to know the facts, nothing but facts. The task is the description. The aim is coming to terms with the reality. Then we come to the impression. How is this for you? It's the same question, the basic question. And we have three sub-steps. We look at the primary emotion. What are the spontaneous feelings? What to encourage people to look at their spontaneous feelings, not what they should feel, but how it is for them. It may be crazy, but how do you feel? Helpless, like a little child. I feel angry. I feel like a nothing. And what is your spontaneous impulse? What would you like to do? It should not be a rational activity, but just what impulse do you have? To cry, to run away, to shout. Whatever it is. It doesn't look like being very personal. But being a person means to live with muscles and blood. We are embodied beings, and therefore we need all these bloods and muscles and impulses and psychodynamics, because in it is embedded our being a person, which we want to bring out, to develop. And then we look to the phenomenological content, because in all these feelings and impulses, in reaction, is something which was spontaneously understood. And this is much more than we think. We call it the phenomenological content or the phenomenal content, the received message. What was this situation telling me? What was this person telling me with her activity which hurt me so much? This is a deeper understanding already of what really hurt me. Psychotherapist is empathic in this situation. The inner positioning, what do you make of it? We try to integrate and find the own. We have four sub-steps. The understanding, we evaluate on an emotional level which corresponds to a phenomenological understanding of the moral conscience. But this is a difficult term, but we all in psychology could say that a sensed evaluation of, is this correct? Does this justice to me? Did I justice to you? I feel it. Now we are in the center of the person. And we attribute cognitive evaluation. What do you think about it? Cognitively. What do you know about it? How is this to evaluate? And then to find out one's will. Is there something which moves within you so that you can do something, that you want to do something? Understanding is self-understanding and understanding of the other. Emotional evaluation is this personally sensed evaluation. Is this correct? Does it do justice to you? This is a strong question. What do you personally feel? And did you do justice to the other? The cognitive evaluation has this conscious position, this integration of knowledge and experience, and finding one's will means, is there something which is moving me? Is there something which I feel should be done? We will have a closer look on this after the break, just to give you the idea how complex it becomes in cases where this short application is too quick or too short. We have to go deeper. And then the expression. What will you do? With four filters. What, to whom, when, how. You have it in this leaflet, in this handout, with the triangle, with the big triangle. You have the basic questions underneath and the description on each step. The indication, finding oneself, indication of PA, of this personal existential analysis process. When I do not know what I really feel, when I have mixed feelings, when I'm confused emotionally, or cognitively, when I do not know how to decide or what to do, what would be best, should I continue my partnership or not? Since months I'm thinking about it, I do not come to an end, but I'm suffering. When I'm thinking of leaving, I'm suffering. When I'm thinking of remaining, I'm suffering. What should I do? This is a cognitive unclarity, an emotional unclarity, which leads to an incapacity to come to an action. So, synopsis, we have in the first step, in PA1, the psychodynamics. This is PA1, with the three steps. This is PA2, understanding, evaluation, taking position will. And then PA3, the action, the accommodation to the reality. This is the general method on the psychotherapeutic level. So, I think I would like to suggest to have a break now. And then you think for yourself what you would like or what you would need, what you would prefer to continue. And we will make a democratic, we are in Britain, we may make a democratic decision afterwards and see how we will proceed. If I will present a case or if I work with somebody of you or if we need some more discussion and then work, or if I can give you an example and you work it in small groups and whatever you find most appropriate for your, or if you have a client which you could role play and we could work on this client or we could work together or we will decide that later. We have a 20 minutes break and we will meet again at 12. Okay, thank you for your attention.